From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. Global Fest 2013. It's the 10th anniversary of Global Fest. I have a studio full of guests and one sort of not feeling so well guest at home, Anastasia Sulkis. Caught the flu since we left Global Fest just barely hours ago.
Really?
Yes.
Short hours.
None of us have, all our hair is sticking straight up, I think. Banning Air included here from Afropop Worldwide. And Rob Weisberg is here from WFMU.
Hey.
And Trans-Pacific Sound Paradise.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
It's the annual gathering, folks. But this is the 10th anniversary, and they kicked off Global Fest. Global Fest being a music festival on a Sunday night at Webster Hall. How many bands this
12 bands in one venue on three floors.
Yeah, and it is just a fabulous evening of packed music. Started off with a legend, someone I've listened to forever and have never seen, Oliver Mutsukutsi.
You've never seen him live?
I've never seen him live, yeah.
Well, I can speak as someone who's seen him live many times because I've been working for many years
Banning
on a book
Air.
About Zimbabwe and about the other great sort of iconic artists from Zimbabwe, Thomas Mapfumo, and there's always been this kind of rivalry between their fans, you know. But Oliver really has just arrived at this incredible moment. I mean, he has such a rich repertoire of songs, and he's in such great shape as a singer, that husky, burly voice. And his stage moves, and he flew in a couple of extra musicians last night, so he really had a full-on band, but all Zimbabwean. And just the way they move, the way they sing, it's so characteristic. You know, so many African bands these days, and so many world music bands are a bit of this and a bit of that, you know. But so to hear a band, even though his music is actually a mix of a lot of things, but they're all coming from this very Harare, Zimbabwe point of view, and you just feel it in every move and the way they interact, and it was just incredibly uplifting.
Why don't we start with the very first thing in the big ballroom was okay. Oliver and the first piece of music he played, because it bowled me over. So beautiful the way he sauntered, Oliver Mutsukutsi sauntered onto stage, the band's playing, and he walks on just so graceful. Really, really beautiful.
So seasoned.
Yes.
Well, I have to say, you know, for me, as one, I've seen him a couple times, but not the many, many times since Banning. I've never seen him in Africa. It totally took me there. And I mean, I came to world music through African guitar music. This was almost the guilty pleasure to say that my favorite set was seeing Oliver Mutsukutsi at Global Fest, because he's not a new artist, but to me, that's the comfort food.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. I loved it.
So well delivered.
It was just so sweet. He had such sweetness on stage that it was just a really lovely performance. And, you know, you didn't have, to me, a sense that you're talking about an artist who has been, I mean, obviously he's an icon, but you didn't have a sense that he's been phoning it in at all. I mean, he was so fully present, and it
Absolutely.
Was just beautiful.
And that same sort of legend status happened actually at the very beginning of the festival, which is only a half hour before Oliver, in a smaller stage downstairs, sitting on basically tables that were covered with beautiful, I assume, Persian rugs. maybe mm-hmm. Turkish rugs, a Persian musician and a Turkish musician. You want to tell us about Gehan Kalhur and his cohort, whose name and presence I'd never seen. So,
Gehan Kalhur, who's this extraordinary Persian Iranian kemanche player and composer, it's a little bowed lute that can be played with a bow and has this gorgeous singing tone, very close to a voice. But it can also be plucked kind of percussively. And so that's Gehan Kalhur, and he was with a Turkish musician who plays a bahulama, which is kind of another lute, but plucked, named Erdal Erzincan. And they've actually been collaborating for about a decade, I think, a decade ago was their first project together. But it's been a long time since they've toured together. And Gehan tends to make music that's a very inward-looking. It's not somber, but very rich and very lyrical. And having an instrument alongside that was plucked, it gave it this incredible bubbling buoyancy, and it sort of was more rhythmic and sort of more light and feeling than some other things he did. And I thought it was beautiful. And to see such a packed room so early in the night was a really, really nice thing, too. It was the very first set of the night.
Let's give a listen to some of that music. When I'm watching this music and these two players being played, which incidentally we'll have some videos online as well and as full concerts from Global Fest. When I'm watching this music, am I seeing two people playing composed music, or is what happening on stage reaction to one another, improvisation?
Well, it's improvised. I mean, you know, I think they really take advantage of the shared connections and sort of language, not spoken language, but sort of feeling of Persian music and Turkish music. There's historical connections, there's aesthetic connections, but they really build an improvisation. And you know, when you look at their set list, there's no songs listed. They've just been at it together, communing for an hour or a little less than an hour. And it's a really beautiful thing. You know, obviously they're going in with some set ideas about how to shape things, but really they beauty of it is seeing these two masters really spin out ideas and react to each other in real time that I find really moving.
They have just stunning virtuosity and incredible depth of knowledge of the musical traditions that they're drawing on, so they can improvise with extraordinary ease. And Gehan, so it's an interesting character because he really studied deeply the classical music, but he's been in New York now for such a long time that he's done many experimental projects, and he's really well-versed in moving between different universes. But you really felt him sort of channeling his deep knowledge of traditions there. So beautiful.
I agree. That's a good point that Anastasia said, though, about having... was it a saz player? Air de la Saz?
Baglama,
technically, I should call it. But it did add, I'm a big fan of the Baglama slash Saz, and it's got this
describe
big,
that
heavy
people don't
sound.
Because
it's like a guitar-like instrument, and it's so in a weird way, it's a little accessible if you're a fan of guitar music. And they did, it was very intimate at the beginning, but there was quite an intense, really profound build-up. And I think that the Baglama really kind of was pushing that, and it was really cool. I really
yeah,
that.
The high points were ecstatic. Yeah, really nice.
The opposite of all of that happened down on a little stage. We have three stages. We talked about the big ballroom where Oliver was. We've talked about now the smaller, more intimate space, the Marlin Room, as it's called. All this at Webster Hall. And then you go to the basement, and there's this tiny little place they call the studio. Talk about intimate, right? And a just absolutely other end of the planet music from La Santa Cecilia, which is an LA-based band, very young, very much steeped in rock tradition, steeped in South American and Mexican tradition. Anyone want to describe the fun that we all had?
I really got a kick out of them. They're kind of a slice of what's coming out of LA these days and other places with bilingual populations, and kind of a mix, both like kind of very new and kind of a throwback, because they're mixing up all these different styles that you might be into growing up as a Mexican kid of whatever generation in L.A. They were playing, some old, like, La Bamba style, Son Veracruz from Veracruz. They were playing some boleros and some old style kind of Chicano rock, almost like Santana.
I'm so glad you said that, because over the course of the night, I heard three different guitar solos that all sounded like Santana-influenced guitar solos. We'll talk about some of the other bands, but yeah, it was totally there.
They're a fun band. They also have a lot of charisma. Their singer was wearing this, like, multi pink, green, orange kind of pinata skirt.
She made that skirt.
Yeah, they make all this stuff. They make, they do CD making parties, CD cover parties with their listeners, and they make pins that they sell at their shows. They're a very artsy, fun band, and also kind of, like I said, kind of all over the stylistic map. Although I will say that what struck me, though, what really got the crowd going was when they played a certain genre of music that's really hot these days around Spanish-speaking, and in general, the cumbia, the 2-4 beat that Mexico shares with Colombia, and they just they rock the house playing the cumbias.
Yeah, it's interesting how these very sort of folksy styles like that and some of the sort of ranchera moment, I didn't see that much of them, but that music is incredibly popular and incredibly hot, and it's kind of a paradox. It's so far from like hip-hop or other things that we would think of as being reaching the youth crowd. It's a paradox.
Right. Although, you know, what's weird about cumbia is because of the beat, it actually works. It works with beats very well, and there's tons of remixing, and I think maybe that's part of it with cumbia.
Let's find a cumbia beat to play for folks. this singer in this band, Anastasia?
Yeah, her name is Marisol Hernandez, and I just cannot get over what a smoky kind of old soul quality she has going on. And, you know, her stage presence, along with the rest of the band, is super fun and light and frilly and orange and red and, you know, just sort of over the top. But there's such just richness and depth and sort of a world weariness in that voice, or a knowingness, I guess. And I love it. It was one of the sets I was most looking forward to last night, tipped off by our colleagues Felix and Jasmine from Alt Latino. And boy, they did not disappoint at all.
I want to say this about Global Fest, and then we'll move on to other stuff, which is that the range of ages, not just of the performers, and the range of faces and characters and people just from every walk of life in the audience.
Yeah, the audience
just
is
thrills
so great.
Me so much for a guy who goes to an awful lot of rock shows. And it's so promising. It's so hopeful. 2 days prior to Global Fest here in New York City is also Winter Jazz Fest. Same thing.
Hmm. Yeah.
Wide range of ages. It leaned a little bit more to guys, maybe. Whatever. But Global Fest is everywhere all over the map, and I love that. You really feel like you're in a community.
That's true.
That said, the other thing that I love so much about it were the quality of voice, which we talked about just now in La Santa Cecilia. But that also happened with a beautiful African voice. Maybe the set for me, and maybe for everybody else in this room, biggest surprise and most thrilling was Christine Salem.
I heard that from many people, and I spoke with her before the show, having not heard her. Just a couple of people said, you've got to hear this woman. And even when I was interviewing, I could hear, whoa, that's an amazing voice. You know, she's coming from Ile Reunion, which is a small Indian Ocean island, and her music has a lot to do with going back to roots and music that's used in spirit possession, and then a lot of it is sort
what
of
what
is interesting,
spirit possession?
Well, trance music. Some of this music is coming out of trance that is tied with religion and connecting with spirits and very African kind of tradition. And for her, it's a real kind of self-discovery, because she talked to me about how in the colonial education didn't tell the people the truth about where they came from. And so for her, delving into this music has been kind of political and kind of a process of self-discovery. And that's part of what you sense in the deep commitment, again, you know, of a real sort of artist.
It was interesting to me that, given what you're saying, actually, that she's deep into the meaning and importance of the roots, that she goes with pure percussion when you see her on stage, no melodic instruments.
It stood out here because there wasn't much that was that stripped down in this Global Fest.
Right, and it's her and her voice, and it's like really powerful.
Yeah.
Malo, 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 yam. Malo, 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 yam. Malo, 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 ya. Malo, 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 ya. My lamon, mumu, bayam, a parmi j'en tunga. Il a répondu à moi, baba, ça vous j'en tête là-bas. My lamon, mumu, bayam, a parmi j'en tunga. Il a répondu à moi, baba, ça vous j'en tête là-bas. Malo, 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 malo.
While she has this amazingly beautiful voice, she is actively in her hands holding this thing that almost looks like a washboard of some sort. It looks wooden, it's slatted, and as she moves it from hand to hand, sort of, it's almost like it's floating in air. It's the rhythm.
That's it's It's actually a group of slender reeds with seeds in them bound together. And you know, it's like a percussion version of panpipes or something, you know. It's there's very distinctive lilt to the rhythm in the Indian Ocean. You see it in Madagascar, Mauritius, Réunion. It's very distinctive, just the way she accentuates the rhythm, the particular cadence of it. Very distinctive.
And strong women voices all night, right, Anastasia? Mm.
I was just delighted, and I heard this from people I didn't know at all on Twitter last night and again this morning, that people were delighted that there are so many strong female artists and front women at this year's Global Fest. I mean, you said earlier, Bobby, and we were talking about sort of the diversity of the crowd. It was so great to see so many really talented female performers take center stage.
And one of those performers was from Mali.
Fatoumata Jawara. Yeah, this is one of the most celebrated new artists out of Mali, which, as we know, has a huge stable of world-famous artists, including the great singer Oumou Sangaré. And Fatou started as one of her backup singers, but she's been in Europe quite a while now. And her debut record, Fatou, was a huge hit in Europe, and it's kind of arriving in the U.S. now. It's a much more subdued affair than what we saw on stage. She came on with this incredible, sexy outfit, amazing, you know, kind of reconceptualized African garb, and just with tremendous
photos online
energy. Yes, yes. I'm not going to attempt to describe beyond that, although Barbarella came to mind at one moment. All right, now I've done it. But the thing about the show, though, was that she was terrific, and she has this amazing voice, as you say. She has all the kind of nuance and the sort of fluttering, bird-like quality of her vocal. But the presentation was really kind of amped up in a very sort of French rock kind of way that I'm not sure was totally hitting it.
I got to say, I saw her do a concert, a longer set, in the fall, and they build it up more slowly. They do more of the intimate stuff from her album. I enjoyed the fact that they actually cranked it up live, even if it was a little Frenchy. You know, it's not from Africa. It's a band in France.
That's right.
I think the guitarist was French.
She's really trying to touch different kinds of aesthetics and reach people broadly. And that, you know, you can't fault her for that.
No, she definitely put on a show. Let's give a listen to Fatoumata Jawara from Mali and come back and talk about a few more things left for Global Fest 2013. Full concerts are online at npr.org. We'll also podcast a number of these concerts at the All Songs Considered Live Concert podcast. We went and took video, one-song videos of about eight of the artists, and we'll have those online as well. So lots of Global Fest coverage, and when you start liking this music, if you're not already a fan, we have many years of archives of these conversations and the music from concerts past. So let's give a listen to Fatoumata Jawara.
Africa, mon Afrique. Comme mon Afrique, réveille-toi. Afrique, réveille-toi. Haïmba de Mungande Wiliwa. Afrique, réveille-toi. Antes de cada guarido llaman a Colón de mis
son bebé que llaman a hablar. Con hambre, con la tu babu, cállame, tu babu, tu babu, tu babu, tu babu. Con hambre, ven, 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 mazarao, cállame, mazarao, mazarao.
Just such a tense situation going on. Four musicians in Mali. This is a woman who lives in France, but certainly has connections with Mali just there.
It's been a very traumatic year for Mali. There's been a rebellion in the north, a coup, and it's extremely complicated. And Fatou had just returned from a month in Bamako, where she recorded a song with this just the complete, you know, sort of A-list of Malian musicians, all calling for peace. But at the same time, as this performance is happening, the French army is moving in to start pushing this Islamist incursion from the north, which is kind of what this rebellion has turned into. And people are cheering them on, and it was interesting talking to her. She said that she basically viewed this as not a conflict between Malians, but rather an international conflict that happens to be happening in Mali, and therefore it's okay to have the French come in and to be calling for peace at the same time. It's a complicated world.
Right, and she did stop the concert and talk about that, and then came in with some really gorgeous, gorgeous music that... and eventually brought us back to a point of celebration, I thought. There was also a lot of, on that big, big stage, we had two big brass bands, right? One was called the Stooges Brass Band, which, not knowing them, I was hoping it was Iggy Pop covers, but it wasn't.
Next time.
Next time, yeah. It was a band from New Orleans. They did an awful lot of go-go music, which is D.C., which is where I'm based.
Yeah, Stooges Brass Band. They're fun. Yeah, kind of funky second line band. They've actually been around for some time, I guess, since the 90s. And, you know, like all those bands, they play in the streets and march, and they
and
also...
cover songs. They did do cover songs. No Iggy Pop, but they had Stevie Wonder. Yeah. They,
you know, I would say also, you know, a fair infusion of hip-hop, too. You know,
yeah.
This is not sort of a period recreation of thing. Anyway, I mean, you said Go-Go Bob, that's for sure, but hip-hop, too, sort of seeds for me everything they do.
And then... there was Muka Paza.
Yeah, well, Muka Paza is, they are kind of the ultimate of a certain phenomenon that's going on. There's all these, this is actually going on all around the country, these huge spectacle brass bands of 25 musicians. A lot of times they start off playing, getting together to play at like a political march and parades and often kind of lefty political stuff. And Muka Paza from Chicago came together the same way, but more than any other of these brass bands, they are really a send-up of a high school band, complete with like their band uniforms, and except they're like kind of funky. They're all different uniforms, and they're like clearly from the thrift shop, and the pom-pom boys and girls,
yeah.
And they do these crazy formations, and they run out into the audience and sit next to you.
Yeah, yeah. Or non-formations.
They're really nutty. They were the
non-conformist band.
Exactly, non-conformist. They call themselves kind of the superstar band nerds or band geeks, you know. Yeah. Revenge of the band geeks.
A lot of theatrics, circus.
A lot of theatrics.
This is like, Mom, I'm going to join the circus kind of band, right?
Exactly.
Who knows how many of them. Like, there may have been 25 of them. There may have been 29 of them. It was so much going on at any one moment. You know, standing with that one of our cameramen, and, you know, he just kept sort of, like, whooshing around to try to catch something else, because at every second there was some lunacy going on. And I get the feeling that each of the members of Muka Paza has developed a very rich and detailed backstory about his or her character.
Well, you know, it's funny. I had a funny introduction to this act, which I knew nothing about, and I was heading up the stairs to it. I guess they'd probably already played their first number. And I was fighting this flood of people coming down the stairs, seemingly running away from it. I was like, okay, enough of that, you know? And I was hearing all these comments to that. And then I got up there, and of course, there's this big remaining crowd that was totally into it. And I just kind of thought, well, this is one of these groups that really sort of separates the wheat from the chaff. You know, there are some people who just cannot handle that level of kind of goofiness, you know, and others who adore it. I was actually quite charmed.
Totally
by
true.
It.
Let's give a listen to some Muka Paza. It couldn't get any bigger than that. And usually what happens, this is Mukupato, and usually what happens when this is all said and done, everybody, whatever the next to last set is, everybody gathers down the very tiniest of room. We now come from the biggest room, and whoever's left, right, all of the survivors come down to the basement room, the little studio room, and gather for what usually is a big band. The last couple of years, I personally discovered, you probably knew him, but Red Barat, Debo Band, and
Nation Beat?
Yeah, and this year they went for something very different. They went for three DJs, mm-hmm. right? And I guess you couldn't really get big band after seeing 28 musicians basically seeing the circus. You couldn't have another circus. The group they went with is a group called A Tribe Called Red. Three DJs behind laptops.
Yeah, drawing on native Canadian, yes. If I'm not mistaken.
Aboriginal Canadian DJ. They have a club, yep. actually, up in Ottawa, where they're based, the Electric Powwow Club, once a month. And, yeah, they're DJs, and they have a big, huge sound. I actually really liked some of the tracks on their CD, like, really kind of blew me away. Where their best stuff is where they take, basically, traditional songs from up there and put the beats to them and big and intense. But the problem they have, which sometimes DJ crews have, is, okay, what do you do for your live show? And
I love their on their videos, you know, that when they do big scale productions, they take a lot of really stereotypical native imagery mm-hmm. and splice it and make this really, to my mind, really fascinating and smart and witty commentary mm-hmm. and sort of turn the stereotypes on their head. And they really didn't have that element. You know, they had a little projection, but it was on black, and you couldn't really see anything. And it just, you know, for the part of the set, I thought there's three guys behind laptops. And, you know, you can have some bump and beats, but really that's, it's hard to hold a crowd. But yeah. Especially after the sort of visual circus of Mukupato.
Well, two things. One is that they did the same in the audio world. They took the old Paul Revere and the Raiders song of what was it called, Indian Reservation or Cherokee People, and they took that mm-hmm. line and they sampled it and they turned that around. There was an old Redbone song whose name I can't remember right now, and they took that and twisted it, threw it into the mix. That was fascinating. For a few songs, they had this, can someone do this for me and help me here? But they had this woman who took what basically are hula hoops, smaller than the average
hula hoop. It's called hoop
dancing. More colorful. Yeah. And did really what was magic.
Yeah, it was
before
beautiful.
Your eyes.
She would arrange them in these kind of formations so that she would have wings like a butterfly, or they'd be above her head. And that's a real traditional art. You know, hoop dancing is a very ancient Aboriginal art in Canada. And so that was beautiful to see. And you know, it seemed sort of paradoxical to see this, like, rather pure, she was in full costume, mm-hmm. Traditional kind of folkloric element thrown in the middle of all this DJ culture, you know. But I thought it worked quite well. I liked that.
I did too. You know, in some ways, the DJ set points to what world music could, I mean, what are we looking for in world music in 20 years out? You know, it's certainly changed from the world music we were listening to in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. It's hard to imagine what are we going to do? How are we going to take these traditions and turn them on their heads? And I think these folks, although didn't have quite the spectacle of other bands, certainly, like you say, Rob, in the power of the music, it was certainly there. And you just wonder, I mean, let's all imagine, what are the things people will do with the traditions come 10 years from now?
You know, I mean, they will continue to morph them and reinvent them in many ways. But I don't know, I myself, you know, coming away feeling that Christine Salem doing the rootsiest thing we saw all night and Oliver Mukuzi doing the most conventional sort of well-established style, his own style, were really the most powerful things for me. So there's something still to be said for holding to the older forms.
Yeah, but we're older mm-hmm. people.
That is true.
So
well,
what do you expect?
I would say that I think that's something Global Fest does really well. They really try to make it, you know, and I'm not even touching the what is world music thing, because that seriously could be a drinking game at this point. But, you know, the question to me is, you know, how do you present that multiplicity, whether it's DJ culture, whether it's super traditional music, whether it's music from the 60s, you know, pop music of the 60s that now has sort of the imprimatur of being traditional music by virtue of its longevity. You know, I think that the producers of that do actually a pretty fair job of balancing all of those movements and all of those different flows of music in one very compact night. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good way to begin year 11 and end year 10, really. Well, let's go out on A Tribe Called Red. And thank you, Banning Air, Rob Weisberg. Feel better, Anastasia. Thanks, everybody. See you next year.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Look forward to it.
A Tribe Called Red. I'm Bob Boylan from NPR Music, videos and audio. Global Fest 2013, all online. It's All Songs Considered.
Self, gal, you got.